We like to think of the Jefferson Exchange as something of a buffet with lots of different items to choose from. And it turns out when we think about a buffet, we get hungry. So we now feature a once-a-month food segment called Savor. Will Smith is our partner. He's a food stylist. He's well-versed in making food, in preparing and manicuring food, and making it look good on camera. Every month he brings a topic, a recipe, and a guest. This week it's a broad topic and potentially a bunch of recipes because he also brings a guest, an old friend of his, Paula Disbrow, the author of the book Thank You for Smoking. Will, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So you want to keep things seasonal. Is barbecue seasonal?
I do. And I think, well, the things I was thinking about, you know, sort of a market update, summer fruit, please run to the markets and finish up your summer fruit. And a very interesting month coming up. We're going to say sort of goodbye to summer fruit and get more into harvest things. So tomatoes are going to come online. Squashes are going to come online. And of course, we're outside. We're trying to enjoy the weather. We're knock on wood.
I've been doing that a lot.
Exactly.
Yes. It's a good August so far.
We've had a very good summer here in Southern Oregon. But, you know, the most ancient of cooking techniques is grilling. And then we sort of, I think, generally, especially in the Pacific Northwest and maybe upper Midwest, we don't have that huge history of smoking. And I just happen to have the perfect person to talk to about it.
So tell us about, introduce us to Paula. Tell us about your history.
Hi, Paula.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. Right.
So I'm very fuzzy over how it all happened, but it had been 25 years ago, and I think that we met through some food event. I don't know if it was a catering thing or whether you were assisting.
Maybe a food styling job, and you were my food styling hero, but it seems like another lifetime ago.
I know. It was a long time ago. And the thing that's really cool about Paula is that not only did she work her way up through the magazines, and then now this is actually her seventh book, which is pretty amazing. Where I sort of lost you was when you left New York and you ended up going to work at a ranch.
A working ranch in the Texas Hill Country, yeah. I guess you know me well enough to know that I'm a fan of dramatic detours, so I left New York a couple times.
Exactly.
I spent a couple years cooking in Europe, but the thing that finally got me to Texas was I took a life-changing job on a working ranch in the Texas Hill Country in a little town called Rio Frio, and we were there for 4 years. That led to my first cookbook called Cowgirl Cuisine. And after that adventure, where my husband and I got to play cowgirl and cowboy on 5,300 acres, we transitioned to Austin in 2006.
That's where you're based now?
Yes. So I guess I never looked back to New York, but it was time for new adventures.
So Paula, in the book, you go a bit beyond just barbecue here. We're talking about adding the smoky flavors you describe in the book.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So you were not a fan of smoking, you tell us.
Well, that's the irony. Before I got to this book, before I got to the last, I would say, 3 years of continuous grilling, I had an aversion to smoked cheese and overly smoked things. And I think because that was mostly a smoke flavor that was created by the, you know, all caps flavor industry. It wasn't a light, natural approach to smoking. Just a quick bit of backstory. A couple years ago, I guess 2.5 years ago, Food 52 asked me to write a different kind of grilling book. And that led to Any Night Grilling. And my assignment was to come up with recipes that were accessible enough to fire up any night of the week, the message being don't save your grill for that Saturday night ribeye. And the other thing they wanted was a broader spectrum of ingredients that are found in most barbecue grilling cookbooks. So that means even though we had steaks and burgers and ribs and the usual favorites, there are a lot more vegetables. There's a whole chapter on grilled cheese and even grilled dough. And so that fun process allowed me to take over the backyard grill for my husband, who before that had done most of our grilling, and really immerse myself in the process. And so I had a blast. I fell in love with outdoor cooking. And I would say that book in the process, I started playing more and more with adding a bit of wood to my charcoal grill. and was just amazed at how much flavor you can get in as little as 20 or 30 minutes by harnessing a bit of wood smoke.
Well, and I love the idea. I think there's two different types of people on the planet. People who really love gadgets and props and things, and I'm
right.
sort of anti that, and I love that you're sort of demystifying how to smoke and how to smoke in a very super easy way.
I wanted it to be as accessible as possible. And as I say in the book, you know, I live in Central Texas now, where it's hard to escape the wafting smell of smoked brisket. I even smell it when I leave my yoga studio, which is super weird.
We have that problem here sometimes, too.
Right. Different kind of smoke.
Exactly. Different kind of smoke.
But so as much as I love, you know, a beautiful smoked brisket, you know, from Franklin Barbecue, few of us have time to babysit a piece of meat for 12 to 14
right.
hours. So my approach is instead using smoke as a seasoning,
yes.
meaning, you know, I have a smoker at home, but honestly, it's covered up quite a bit. I have a Weber Smoky Mountain. But for my last book, Thank You for Smoking, I developed the entire book on my charcoal grill.
Yeah.
I use a PK cooker, which is a heavy cast aluminum charcoal grill. So the way I did that was just to set it up for a two-zone cooking and, you know, well, you know, William, the first part of the book is kind of devoted to ingredients
right.
that are smoked on indirect heat. And the way I do that is just adding some kind of smoke source, whether it's a hardwood log or wood chunks or wood chips, to the glowing embers and then smoke and on indirect heat and vent my grill for smoking.
Well, it's interesting, too, because the other thing that I really loved about the book was that you have all of these varieties of things, and also perhaps not smoking a piece of meat, but actually smoking one ingredient that might be in the salad. I just think that's such a beautiful thing, and I love that the chapter on the smoked larder and all of those sort of smoked ingredients that you can keep jarred and use when you want to.
Thank you. That was the fun part for me, to sort of approach smoking in a different way, you know, beyond meats and those like classic weekend favorites, and to think about smoking individual ingredients, everything from, you know, there's chapters on grains, on, you know, smoked oats and quinoa.
Yeah, the carrot quinoa salad blew my mind.
Yeah, sounds great.
It's so delicious and so easy, honestly. And if you haven't smoked barley yet, it will lead you to the most delicious summer salad with
wow.
heirloom tomatoes and burrata. So the idea was, you know, to make this process as time efficient as possible is you can bulk smoke all of these dried items, you know, from French lentils to pecans to pistachios or pumpkin seeds.
Smoked lentil salad. That sounds amazing, too.
And it's great. And so what you do is, and you can do this with the residual heat. Like, let's say you fire up you grill a piece of fish, right, or
right.
chicken thighs. You've got enough heat on your grill. You know, when you fall in love with grilling, it's painful to walk away from this beautiful bed of glowing embers.
So great.
So
I love it. Use them up.
Right? You use that lingering heat
yeah.
to put, you know, you can put three or four items on indirect heat in disposable aluminum pans, close the grill, vent it for smoking, make sure you have a steady stream of smoke wafting, you know, out of the grill, and that tells you you're getting flavor from smoke. And, you know, you're eating your dinner and you're cooking ahead for the rest of the week. So over time, you have this awesome smoked larder where your everyday or, you know, weeknight staples like lentil salad or a soup or, let's see, you know, some smoked nuts to pull out at happy hour or add to a salad become so much more interesting because they're flavor enhanced from the get-go.
All right, you can fill the house with stuff that's been smoked. Paula right. Disbrow, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the new cookbook, Thank You for Smoking, brought in by her old friend Will Smith, our partner on our regular monthly food segment, Savor. Here's where we are right now. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760. Questions, comments, recipes of your own to share, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Paula, dig down a little further into two-zone cooking. What are you doing with the grill there?
That simply means you have your heat on one side of the grill. So you have a pile of charcoal on one side, and you have no heat source on the other. And that simply creates a safety zone and gives you tons of flexibility to cook something and brown it or sear it over direct heat, but then rotate it around the heat source as needed. So if something starts to, you know, brown or even blacken too quickly, but you want it, let's say a bone-in chicken thigh, right? You want to give it a nice, you want to crisp the skin, but if it's cooking too quickly, maybe you start it over direct heat, as I do, and then you move it over to indirect, close your grill, and vent it, and it allows things to cook more gently.
A refuge, then, in essence, for
exactly.
For
and what is the difference of the product by doing that sort of dry versus having a pan of water?
That's a great question. So, in especially in the smoked larder section of my book, it's important to have a drip pan of water on the indirect side. So, let's say I'm smoking nuts. Or salmon, or especially dry ingredients like the dried legumes and seeds and grains. And the water does a couple things. It tempers the heat, so it creates a more even heat, but it also creates humidity that allows the smoke to adhere to what you're cooking.
So it's like your glue.
Yes, you know, when you're searing a steak or a burger or lamb chops, you don't need that because the fat does the same thing, right? It kind of collects all the flavors in the grill. But when you have something like barley or quinoa or oats, it's really important to, like I said, temper the heat so they don't brown too quickly, especially things with higher fat like seeds or nuts. They can turn dark quickly.
Okay.
So the water will help even out the heat, balance it, and also help that delicious smoke flavor stick.
Now, Will, the picture we put on the web, we've talked about the wood chips so yes. far, but your picture shows several items, including wood chips. But what's the other stuff in that picture?
So, and I love this. So this shot is on our radio website, and it's
beautiful,
it's,
Will.
Oh, thank you. It was just the other sources of smoke that you mentioned, which I love, the fresh herbs. And obviously, I guess these things are maybe a little bit more delicate than the hardwoods. Which I really love this idea of these delicate smoke flavors in other items other than meat. That's why I just love this book so much.
Yes, well, thank you so much. It's my approach as well. And as I said, you know, initially I had this aversion to an overly smoked flavor, but used in less time, you know, and used as a seasoning, not. Always a cooking process, you do get a more natural, delicate flavor. And I feel so lucky that I had this charge of these two books that allowed me to experiment. So one of the things I started playing with, beyond my primary smoke sources, which are, you know, as I mentioned, a log or wood chunks or wood chips, I moved into other things that just create this fantastic perfume in a short amount of time. Like fresh herb sprigs is one of my favorites. And when I say sprigs, I mean, you know, hardy sprigs. Like, you know, rosemary is really prevalent in Texas. They say it's bulletproof.
And so, Ashland.
Yes, right?
Yes.
So I'm talking about hardy sprigs
sure.
like that have some nice natural resiny oil. And that helps create this wonderful perfume. So I will throw, you know, snip a few sprigs of rosemary or bay leaf branches are fantastic. Put them on the periphery of the fire so they smolder. You know, you don't want them to just burst into flame.
Okay, that was more one of questions, yeah.
Yeah, and so something simple like, you know, a chicken breast will pick up that rosemary smoke so beautifully. And it's really fun. A few other examples are tea leaves, and it's really fun to do with other spices like coriander, star anise, peppercorns, and put them in a perforated foil packet, meaning the perforation is on top, and put them directly over the coals to get sort of a, you know, it's delicious with duck or chicken. Corn husks are fantastic. You get that kind of sweet, grassy aroma. And if you use corn husks, what you want to do is, after shucking corn, soak the husks, you know, get rid of the silk, soak the husks in cold water for about 20 minutes, put them directly on the embers under whatever you're cooking.
Yeah, and that sounds absolutely delicious to me, too.
So good with fish.
Yeah.
You've got to do it. And surprisingly, this was new to me, but something I played with in the research was hay.
I noticed that. Hay, yeah.
a lot of chefs have fallen in love with this, but it's actually an kind of celebrity chefs here in the States. It's actually an old method in Italy.
Very cool.
What you do is, first of all, you have to seek out hay that hasn't been treated. So you should go to one of your local farmers there in Ashland, or even a pet store, and find something like alfalfa or timothy.
Right.
And so you can do it a couple ways. You can put an inch or so layer of the hay directly on the coals, on the embers, and then again you'll close the grill and you'll see, you know, when the steady stream of smoke comes up, that'll give whatever you're cooking this sort of nice grassy wheat filled flavor. Or you can actually kind of cover whatever you're cooking, let's say a pork chop or a ham steak, with the hay. And in that situation, I would put it in a larger disposable aluminum tray and put like an inch of hay down, and then put your meat. Let's say you have a beautiful Berkshire, you know, porterhouse pork chop. Put the meat on the hay, cover it with hay, and then put that over direct heat. And then cover that grill. And it's just, you know, it's a nuance. It's nothing that's going to hit you over the head.
Right.
And that's what I like about it. It keeps the integrity of the ingredient, you know, front and center.
Paula Disbrow here on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the cookbook, Thank You for Smoking. It's about smoking not just meats, but a whole bunch of other stuff, too. And as you hear from a bunch of different smoking sources, she's our guest in this month's edition of Savor with our regular Will Smith. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Laura in Klamath Falls. Welcome to the Exchange. Laura, you there?
Hi, Laura. Hi there. I just wanted to say I do love smoke flavoring. However, I just want your listeners to be aware that, you know, when you're barbecuing or smoking, you really need to be aware of the impact on your neighbors and even on your family, because a lot of people try to do this in very enclosed areas like patios.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And those of us who have problems with smoke deal with this all summer long. And so it's something that people need to keep in mind. Just because you can barbecue and smoke things doesn't mean it might be a great idea where you're located, or, you know, if there's people around you who are sensitive to that.
Okay. Thanks for the reminder on that, Laura. And any tips do you have, Paula, on ways to keep the smoke under control and not gas out your neighbors?
Laura's right. It's essential to have a well-ventilated area. You know, wouldn't have written this book in my New York days in my apartment. I'd be grilling on the roof in Brooklyn. But you know, in a backyard, you know, firing up dinner for 45 minutes or so. Mostly, it makes my neighbors hungry, and they say, "What are you cooking?" or "What time is happy hour?"
I think it has to do with those, you know, again, you do talk about it in the book with the big hickory or mesquite or those stronger smelling things. But there's so many of the recipes that are a quick 20-minute, 30-minute smoke with something that's a little bit more less aggressive.
Let me reiterate, this is not a book for all-day smoking. This is,
as
Paula pointed out earlier, this is stuff you can actually do in less than an hour
in a lot
of cases. And I should point out, too, we probably would not have had this segment last summer, I'm thinking, because when we were covered with smoke ourselves,
this is not
something we wanted to do with our food.
Like, that was sort of my thought, was that, you know, let's talk about maybe one good thing about smoke.
Right. I understand the sensitivity completely.
Yes.
And, you know, on an industrial level, of course, it can be overwhelming. And we've had situations in Austin where barbecue restaurants have moved into, you know, residential areas. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of smoke. And that sort of does affect your life. But certainly not the recipes in this book. It's a quick way to fire up something more delicious and unexpected for dinner.
We had another question about the health effects of smoke, though. I mean, is there anything carcinogenic in the stuff that we're potentially putting on food here?
Well, the important thing is to use natural lump charcoal that isn't treated with anything. There are natural briquettes out there now, but I still don't use them because I just sort of like the pure. I don't mind the uneven shapes. I just like the purest form of charcoal. I use oak or hickory, or, you know, post oak is the most common in Texas, or sometimes mesquite. So if you use a natural product, and of course you must seek out wood that's untreated with any chemicals, and you don't want green wood, because that will create a more, you know, green or moist wood will create a more acrid, bitter smoke that is not good to smell or breathe in and not good to eat.
Okay, good
and
tips
the other
there.
Thing is to keep your grill clean, Jeff, because, over time that will collect debris that will influence the smoke and what you're eating. So, you want the fire to burn as cleanly as possible, and a clean grill will help that.
Is there any hope for those of us who have gas grills and like the convenience?
Absolutely. It was a caveat in my book contract that all the recipes had to be gas grill friendly. And basically what you'll want to do to create these flavors in a gas grill, you're looking at either one of those handy little wood boxes where you're relying on soaked wood chips. You really have to use chips because, wood chunks just don't, they're not going to work as well.
Right.
So you put the soaked chips in the box or in a double wrapped aluminum packet is what I do. And again, I perforate it with the cut side up and you put that directly over the heat of one side of the grill. And then, your meat's on the other side. And, if you want to create an indirect zone, you just kill one of the sides or the middle burner if your grill has one.
Perfect. That's exactly
what I was
looking for.
So you're relegated to chips, but it is a way to really work your gas grill harder and get the most possible flavor.
Have not asked about one of the more exotic things that you talk about in this book on smoking, because, we've got, there are certainly lots of meats and vegetables and things like that, but there's a whole section on cocktails.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, William knows me well. And I will tell you honestly, one of my top three favorite recipes in the whole book is the smoked Castel Vetrano olives. Mm. And some of the things that came off the smoker, just the way it adds this depth and kind of meaty flavor, it doesn't hit you over the head with smoke, but it's so much more interesting and delicious. And, Castel Vetrano are these buttery green olives from Sicily, and smoked and placed in a martini. I promise they'll make your martini dreams come true.
Yum.
And so it's things like that. The idea with this in the smoked cocktail chapter is I have various condiments like smoked pickled cherries or the olives that enhance a drink. And then there are also charred citrus fruit for a smoky margarita.
That's the one I love. Yeah.
Some smoky salt.
Tempt us just for a second on dessert.
Oh, well, that was also a very, very fun and very revelation for me, the possibilities of whether you smoked spices to, say, put in a pastry crust. There's a delicious berry galette made with a smoked pink peppercorn crust.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay,
William, you would love that crust. It's super flaky, but the smoked pink peppercorns aren't overt. It's just, I say it's almost like a song you can't quite remember. It's this whiff of something.
That's great. Paul Disbrow, we got to go. This is Savor. Will Smith, Paul Disbrow, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Loved it.